You're listening to the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now here's Frank and Martin on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box, all new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with Martin Kilcoyne here till 12. The commission in a minute. Here's an interesting question. Did the Cardinals make a mistake by not promoting Jeff Luhnow to GM instead of Mozeliak? He took the Astros out of the armpit of the MLB to a World Series. I will say this. He had the advantage of the Astros being so horrible for so long that he got all those nice early picks, and that's one reason. Now, he's a very smart sports executive, but so is John Mozeliak.
Yeah, and I think Luhnow would say in 4 or 5 years from now, I'd like to have a run similar to the run that they had from 11 through 15. I mean, I don't want to fall in that trap because I think the Cardinals have been too comfortable with that, saying, look at what we've done. Look at our great run. But if you ask the Nationals, would they take that five-year window? The Astros would take that today in a heartbeat. So with Mozeliak, you did have a really good stretch there. And in the Astros, what, is this their third time in total, or is this just their second time in under Luhnow? Because they had that wild card win, then they lost that terrible series with the Royals where they had it won. It was over. The Royals thought their season was over. I think this is just their second time in the postseason combined.
All right, let's welcome to the program the Hall of Famer, Rick Hummel. Rick, good to be with you. How are you?
I'm fine, man. How are you?
Very good. Right off the bat, I'm watching CC Sabathia the other night with that big body, and he's so effective. 237 wins, 2.846 strikeouts, and 6 All-Star games. He end up in Hall of Fame?
He might. His stats aren't as good as, let's say, Mike Mussina. He's not in the Hall of Fame, though. Mussina won, you know, about 40 or 50 more games, 40 more games probably than at least 30 more games than Sabathia did. And didn't have as many strikeouts, but Mussina hasn't really come close yet. So I kind of think that 250 wins is a benchmark before I get too excited about a pitcher.
Hey, Commish, somebody made the point about whether Luhnow had stayed, if they'd chosen him over Mozeliak, but as I recall, he wasn't a candidate, was he? I know he was working in-house, but it was Antonetti out of Cleveland was the strong other candidate, right? Was Luhnow even considered for the GM role?
I don't think so. I mean, they only considered one guy in house here was Mo. Antonetti was the leading candidate, and that franchise has done pretty well, too.
So what type of selling and recruitment are the Cardinals doing with Jim Hickey? And do you think the Cubs have the upper hand because he's from Chicago and worked with Madden for that long, or would it be the Cardinals with all this fine young pitching in the organization?
Well, I think the fine young pitching has the edge. The Cubs do not have fine young pitching. They have old pitching. They have some young pitchers. If you call Hendricks, I mean, he's been around 4 or 5 years now. He's not so young anymore either. But the Cubs don't have Reyes. They don't have Weaver. They don't have Martinez. They don't have Dakota Hudson. That's, you know, the Cardinals' young pitching is the envy of almost every team in baseball. So if I was a pitching coach, I'd side on that side.
What's your Cubs to-do list, and how good do you think they are next year? I would think, pitching-wise, they've got a lot of concerns for 2018.
Well, they're not going to have Blackie back. Probably don't want him back. Arrieta is going to get a big contract from somebody, and the Cubs have not seemed inclined to jump into those waters, but they might have to. Wade Davis won't be back in all probability, so they got to find a closer. I'm sure they thought Edwards was going to be that guy, but his postseason resume was kind of sketchy this year, where he was walking Yu Darvish, for instance, of the game on the line. So they've got a lot of work to do. Lester's going to be a year older. Hendricks is really the only solid pitcher that they have in their rotation, other than Quintana, who they picked up from the White Sox, and Quintana is probably their top guy.
Do they have much waiting? I know they traded a lot of prospects because position-wise, there's nowhere for those guys to play. Do they have any young arms sitting in, you know, AAA?
Not really. Like, they would have brought those guys up. Montgomery is a good left-handed arm who's not that old, but they're going to have to go get their pitching from outside the organization.
Hmm. What about Mr. Gersh saying that the Cardinals are not likely to pay retail for a closer, but there's quite a few closers out there right now who could really help your club that are free agents that you're going to have to pay a lot of money for. Or do you think they put that package together and try to go get Colomé?
Well, Colomé, you've got Ozuna from Toronto, who's been a good postseason pitcher and a good pitcher for the Blue Jays in general, who's been closed for, I guess, 2 or 3 years now. And you don't have to pay a lot of money to get those guys. You have to give players to those teams. But Wade Davis is probably the top free agent guy out there, but how many years do you want to give him? It looked like he was a little wobbly in the playoffs this year, too. I think their closer is going to come from a trade with Nicasio as the sidecar.
And no chance that you could say, hey, Reyes, you're coming back. We don't want you in the rotation. Or even an older version of Wainwright just as a closer. Do you see any in-house maybe getting creative where they would go to one of those guys?
I think in-house, down the line, Alcantara could be the guy, but I don't think he's quite ready for that. I think you have to have a veteran guy in place. That could be Nicasio, but I'd like to see somebody better than that. And then Alcantara could develop this next year as your next closer. Reyes, I don't think, will be ready to take on that kind of responsibility at the start of spring training after being out a year. I think he'll be brought back in the bullpen as a setup guy if he's not able to start, and then maybe could be in that closer situation later on, but not at the start of the season.
Any chance the Cardinals would kick the tires or re-ask Jose Oquindo to come back and have him be the bench coach? And if not, who's the most likely candidate to succeed David Bell?
Well, I think probably Pop Warner or Mike Schilt, guys who are already on hand. They had an extra coach in Warner at the end of the season, and Warner's been in the system a long time, knows all the players that came up through the system. I think he'd be the perfect guy. I don't really see Oquindo coming back to do this. He didn't want to be he wants to be a third base coach if he's going to coach. And bench coach doesn't strike me as something that that he would really want to do to leave Florida for another whole season of traveling around. He likes it in Florida.
And Mike Matheny had said over the years that David Bell would challenge him and that he wanted somebody next to him who would come up with a different idea. Do you see that, whether it's Schilt or Pop Warner? Do you think they have that personality?
I don't know Schilt as well as Pop. Probably Pop's been in the organization, at least at the big league level, at the high big league level, a little longer. I think they both can do that. Pop, I know, can do that, and I'm pretty sure Mike can too, but I don't know Mike quite as well.
So what do you think is going on right now with the Hickey sweepstakes? Do you think they're both has he come to St. Louis? Are they trying to wine and dine him? Is Adam Wainwright part of the recruiting process? Tell me about it.
I'm not sure what the process entails. I suspect Hickey was close to coming to the Cardinals until that Cubs thing opened up, and I don't know. Just because he worked for Madden for that many years, that doesn't mean they necessarily got along all that well. And as we talked about previously, the Cardinals have a better pitching future than the Cubs do. Do the Cubs have a better team future? Well, maybe this year, for a year or two they do, but not for the long term, especially pitching-wise. So I think the Cardinals are still in the lead for Hickey, but now you've got a couple other things that have opened up. The Giants have opened up. Cleveland's opened up. There's all kinds of balls in play now where a guy might want to step back a second and say, wait a minute, now let's take a look at everybody before I sign on.
What do you think of Dusty Baker getting fired? They go to the NLDS 2 years in a row. I mean, to me, you look at the resume that the Nationals franchise has more so than what Dusty did, because it didn't work with Davey Johnson. It didn't work with Matt Williams. At some point here, if I'm a promising young manager, you're going to take the job. But I would think at some point it's fallen back on that organization and maybe even Rizzo, the GM, that they're quick to fire the managers in D.C.
Yeah, I feel bad that Dusty got let go, because Dusty did not lose that series. The Nationals had a better team than the Cubs. I think we could see that, especially as mediocre as the Cubs' pitching was. But that catcher had just an awful inning, Wieters, when the Cubs extended their lead there, went ahead and then extended the lead. And that isn't Dusty's fault. I've been writing his name on the lineup card. Something happens with I don't think Davey Johnson managed a real great fifth game in 2012 when they lost to the Cardinals. That should never have happened with a 6-run lead, too. There's a star-crossed operation there, and Dusty took the bullet. I guess their thinking is, well, okay, we gave him these great players for 2 years, and he's lost in the fifth game of the of the division series. They didn't even make the league championship series. That was the worst part. If they'd got maybe one more round under their belt, if they'd actually won, the Nationals never won a playoff series. So I could see why they want to make that change, because they've advanced no farther than they ever have.
I want to ask you about a former Cardinal and the future of Matthew Scott Holliday, who did have a decent season with 19 home runs and 64 RBIs, but in the postseason he only got 3 at-bats. What do you think's next for him, if anything?
I think he'll explore the possibilities of being a DH for somebody, but he was sick this year and hurt a little bit. I think he's done. It was tough to watch the playoffs and watch Holliday not play at all except for the one start he got, and Beltran being almost helpless too except for the one hit he got off Kimbrel in Boston to help win that division series. But Beltran's been bypassed as the DH, and he might get some at-bats in the series, but for the most part they went with other guys, and they went with everybody else but Holliday. So I think I think Holliday's done. And I think Beltran's done after this year.
Astros, Dodgers, who do you see? Anybody with a real edge?
The only edge that's clear is that Kenley Jansen is a lot better than anybody the Astros have in their bullpen. Now, A.J. Hinch had a good bullpen idea the other day. He used one guy for 4 innings in McCullers. Didn't mess with Ken Giles or any of those other guys that they had out there. But Jansen gives the Dodgers something that the Astros don't have, and a lot of teams don't have. He's a lockdown closer. Now, the Astros' starting pitching is deeper, but I like to side on the edge of the bullpens in this case. And the Astros' bullpen, the Dodgers' bullpen, even besides Jansen, is much better than Houston. So I'm going to go with the Dodgers.
I wonder if it could come down to which starting pitching superstar is better. Does Kershaw dominate the series, or does Verlander dominate the series?
Either one could, and it looks like they won't have to pitch against each other either, because Verlander is going to go in the second game, I think. Kershaw in the first, obviously. When they come down to the next time around, it'd be Kershaw in the fifth and Verlander in the sixth. So it's too bad those two great stars won't oppose each other unless somebody goes on 3 days rest later in the series.
Guy
could dominate. I think Kershaw has got the better chance to be the dominant starter in this series, because Verlander's had two real tough starts in the American League Championship Series, and Kershaw's were fairly routine.
Commissioner, who are some of your favorite deadline deals? Now, obviously, Verlander's different because it was even after you had to get waivers. It was last minute. It was literally the last minute, I guess. And if we look back at it, it was just he didn't know if he wanted to make that move or not. Ended up being exactly what they needed. And I was trying to think historically. Randy Johnson was an Astros deadline deal at one point, right? Wasn't he, like, unbelievable for them?
Yeah, they got him the year they lost. They lost to San Diego, beat him in the playoffs, I think.
Like 98, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the Astros had a really good club then. But, yeah, that was a deadline beater. I guess, go way back, and Lou Brock was a deadline deal, and the deadline was June 15th.
How about the Doyle-Alexander one that really worked out for a season, and then not so much after John Smoltz became a Hall of Fame pitcher for the Braves?
Yeah, that's a good one. Alexander was terrific.
Yeah,
8-0. After they got him in Toronto. But Toronto, right? Yeah.
Yep.
And I don't know. That's a good one, though. Hitter-wise, I think Brock is still the one I'm going to stick with. I'm sure if I think about it a little bit more, there'll be some other ones coming to mind, but I'm going to stay with that one.
Yeah, the big Randy Johnson in 98 for the Astros. He went 10-1 with a 1.28. ERA.
Wow.
That's pretty effective.
And then Kevin Brown, I think, beat him at least once and maybe twice in the playoffs.
Was Cesar Cedeno, was he at the deadline?
We got him for the final month, didn't we?
Well, that was kind of like the Verlander deal, though, really. They got him for the final month.
Yeah.
That wasn't July 31st. That was an August 31st situation.
And then Will Clark worked out pretty well.
That's a good one, yeah. Clark came at the July 31st deadline from Baltimore, and when he hit 345, and one of the few guys who retired absolutely at the pinnacle of his career, right? He thought about, do I want to really try to stay in shape to play another year? No, I want to go hunting and fishing.
Yeah.
I'm done.
And Kamish, wasn't he the last person to actually drink bottleneck beers in the clubhouse after the game?
Yeah, and he would yell for Ankiel and Drew. Ankiel, Drew, get me a beer.
Yeah.
those two guys would run around and bring back two beers.
It was so weird because, Martin, where were you used to interviewing Harrison Bader having a protein shake after a game? And Will would have these bottleneck beers, just pounding them down and giving you great sound.
And you knew he had a beer gut because he'd have that stupid belt real tight, like in the baseball belt with the jersey.
He had a horrible body for being that great a player, you know?
Larry Walker, he was in August, wasn't he?
Larry Walker came early August. He was the waiver period first opens up after the July 31st deadline. So he came, and so did Woody Williams, kind of the same week in August, like August 4 or 5, something like that.
Right, but after the official deadline, they were both in August. Right. And all the guys that Walt would trade, people would say, oh, you can't give this guy up, you can't give this guy up. For the most part, you look back at those deals, and you'd say, oh, who cares?
Yeah, who burns you?
I said the Renteria deal. Remember at the time, people were like, oh, you can't give up Manny Ibar. You can't get rid of Manny Ibar.
Or how about our number one draft choice ended up in Houston?
Brett Wallace.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
He was going to be the cleanup hitter behind. Albert was going to bat third and Wallace fourth. We had that discussion one time, I think.
Yeah, we did.
Years ago.
Delete that tape.
Kamish, good stuff. Thank you so much, sir.
Thanks, guys.
The Kamish joining us, Hollywood Casino Press Box.
So, Frank, your opening comments all about Mizzou and Kansas. I was listening to that, and Bill Self clearly is calling the shots. We know that in terms of this rivalry. He doesn't have a boss, it appears, right? The AD answers to him. The school president answers to Bill Self. How many people can you think of that literally have no boss? Like, you could say, well, Donald Trump is in charge of the free world, but he also has advisors. Now, they may not be that effective at keeping him in line, but he has people behind closed doors who are going to try and berate him a little bit or say, don't say this, don't do this. How many people get pulled behind the door? Mike Matheny has Mozeliak and DeWitt. Mozeliak has a lot of power, but he ultimately answers to DeWitt. So DeWitt would be one person, I guess, who has no boss.
When Bill Clinton was president, I don't think Hillary had a boss because she had so much on him and she had so much power. She had nobody she'd have to answer to. Now, a lot of owners in professional sports teams,
Bill
DeWitt.
Because if you're a business owner, you have the shareholders who you're directly responsible for. You'll have, annual meetings every year. But if you're the team owner, like Mark Cuban,
doesn't answer
to anybody.
And owners are almost like, it's unfair. Let's think of I'll tell you who's got a lot of juice is Mike Bush.
There you go.
He's been there for a long time. He does great work. I'll tell you a little story. Is when we made a transition with our news director, Larry and I convinced Audrey that Mike Bush had taken over as news director. And so I told Mike, we told this to Audrey. So Mike pops into the sports office. He says, look, not many things are going to change. I am going to get you two full-time sports photographers, and we're expanding sports on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays to 20 minutes. And I just want you to know you have my full support. Good luck. I'll talk to you guys. We'll have a meeting a little bit later. And he shuts the door. And Audrey's like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. And then, so at the time, all that was out there at Channel 5 on our emailing was that the news director is leaving. So Rennie happens to text Audrey, hey, what's going on with the news director? So Audrey texts Rennie back.
Oh no.
Mike Bush has taken over. And Rennie's calling her. Are you serious? And so we had to tell Audrey, no. We were just joking there for a minute.
Now, as the sports director, Frank, how do you get her back mentally? Because you've now built this thing up, and she's like, wow, we're going to the next, what? That was a joke? And it was your doing?
It only lasted about 15 minutes, fortunately, so.
When I was interviewing at Channel 2, we went to Turvey's on the Green. Remember that place?
Oh, yeah. Dale Turvey. Run by Bernie Federko's good friend.
Dale Turvey. Yes. Turvey's on the Green. I think it's the place
by the old radio station.
And yeah, Joe Roderick hangs out there now. Yep. It's maybe the kitchen or maybe the sink or maybe it's the kitchen sink. Anybody? Roderick, text in. Anyway, that location over there, Union. And it's Pete Peterson, who's the sports director at the time. And Dave Jobe, longtime sports producer, and also Randy Thurman, another sports producer. So I was in town for an interview, and they take me out to dinner. It's just like a Wednesday or Thursday night. And they had a Mizzou kid interning, and he's back at the station, and they said, just keep an eye on things. So there's no cell phones or email. They called and said, hey, everything going all right? Are you recording the game? I forget who was playing. And they said, we'll be back in a little bit, but it's going to be crazy. And this kid was real hyper, the intern. So they said, the Blues just traded Brett Hull. So get ready, buddy. It's going to be a busy night. And they're just messing with them. So they hang up the phone. We finish dinner. We come rolling back into the station. Now, I'm just interviewing for the job. I'm just along for the ride. We walk into the newsroom, and they're all running around and like, Pete, get on set. And they're like, what? And they're like, we're going to do a cut-in. What do you mean to cut in? We're going to break into programming here. We got some whole video pulled. Do we know any of the deal particulars? And they said, what are you talking about? They said, your intern came running into the newsroom and said Brett Hull had been traded. And now they had to say, oh, we were just kidding because he's kind of hyper and we were out to dinner. And they're like, all of a sudden, everybody in the newsroom looks, so this isn't true. They were probably already at Schmeezing's interviewing fans.
And you thought that was the operation you should sign with and work there for the next 20
years.
Well,
I said, maybe there's a power vacuum here.
Wow.
So apparently, Channel 5 will not be expanding sports.
No.
But Mike Bush is not the news director, but he sort of is.
Yes. All right, we'll take a short time out. Hollywood Casino Press Box, we're coming right back.